Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, December 10, 2020. U.S. lawmakers are discussing proposals for removing Sudan from the list of countries sponsoring terrorism.
We also recognize that Sudan really doesn't have much money. And our case is far larger than the USS Cole and the embassy bombings. We have a lot more victims.
And the UN Mine Action says explosive ordinances continue to kill people in South Sudan.
There have been 46 people hurt, 45 of them being children, one adult this year. Since records began, more than 5,000 people have been the innocent victims of landmines and other unexploded ordnance in this country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States Senate Committee on Foreign Relations has proposed two legislative options to remove Sudan from the state sponsors of terrorists. The two documents are a compromise that allow U.S. lawmakers to remove Sudan from the terror list, compensate victims of terror attacks from 1998 and 2000, as well as allow victims of the September 9/11 to seek compensation from Sudan. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
The two documents are a compromise that allow U.S. lawmakers to remove Sudan from the terror list, compensate victims of the 1998 and 2000 terror attacks, and allow victims of the September 11 attacks in 2001 to seek compensation from Sudan. Senators Chuck Schumer and Bob Menendez said in a statement released yesterday, the proposals would restore Sudan's sovereign immunity, preserve and protect the claims of 9/11 families, and resolve the embassy bombings and other international terrorism-related claims against Sudan. The senators say the two options are meant to strike a compromise, either of which would, in their words, overcome severe problems with the deal the State Department cut with Sudan that have tragically pitted different groups of victims of terrorism against one another. Under the State Department deal, Sudan agreed to pay $335 million to compensate victims of terror attacks on the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania in 1998, as well as the bombing of the USS Cole off the coast of Yemen in 2000. Both attacks were carried out by Al-Qaeda, but Sudan was found guilty of supporting the terrorist group. The deal did not include 9/11 victims. Andrew Maloney, liaison counsel to the 9/11 families in a lawsuit against Sudan and Saudi Arabia, tells South Sudan in Focus he welcomes any deal that provides compensation and justice for victims of terrorism, including the embassy bombing victims and the USS Cole victims.
We wish and someday expect that the 9/11 victims will be included someday, but for now, we don't want to stand in the way of compensation to the other bombing victims, provided that the 9/11 victims are not, their lawsuit against the Sudan for similar conduct is not in any way jeopardized.
Maloney and other lawyers who represent thousands of 9/11 victims sued Sudan in 2002, a case that is still pending in court. Unlike the victims of the two other terror claims against Sudan, Maloney says, his clients have yet to get a hearing in court to present evidence against Sudan, but insist he has a case that links Sudan to the attacks in Africa and on U.S. soil.
The conduct of Al-Qaeda in each of those three attacks is in a relatively confined time period, 1998, 2000, and 2001. Those are the three attacks we're talking about. All three cases had certificates of default. The first two got judgments of default for money damages. We were going to do that, but there were a lot of things that were, there were a lot of reasons why we held off on doing that, not the least of which was the civil war in Sudan and some overtures to try to see if there's something, there was a better path to a resolution. We also recognize that Sudan really doesn't have much money. And our case is far larger than the USS Cole and the embassy bombings. We have a lot more victims.
In exchange for the deal reached with the Trump administration, and after compensating the 1998 embassy bombing victims and the 2000 bombing of USS Cole, Sudan is expecting a blanket immunity against any future terror-related claims. But Meloni says Congress should not grant Sudan any such immunity because it would deny his clients the right to pursue compensation for the 9/11 attacks. He says the Menendez-Juma legislation could still remove Sudan from the terror list, compensate terror victims who already won court rulings against Sudan, and allow the 9/11 families to pursue their case against Sudan.
The legislation is seeking a compromise to accomplish all of that. That's what the press release says, and we support that. As long as they are not depriving the 9/11 families of their rights to obtain justice and compensation from the Sudan.
Meloni says the proposed legislation is based on earlier talks with U.S. lawmakers who want to preserve the right of 9/11 victims to pursue their case against Sudan.
Some have asked us about some kind of compromise in terms of what could be said in the legislation. So is there a way to get Sudan off the state sponsor of terrorism list, but preserve our rights to pursue our claims under a different law called JASTA, that's Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. And we've said there might be a way to do that if the law is amended in certain ways that protects our clients in their case against Sudan, Saudi Arabia, and others.
U.S. lawmakers, who are set to adjourn for the holidays next Friday, are expected to pass legislation on the matter before the end of the year. A Sudanese diplomatic source in Washington, D.C., who disapproved of the proposed legislation, declined to comment on the record, saying that negotiations are still underway with the Trump administration, the State Department, and lawmakers. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
The United Nations Mine Action Service in South Sudan says 5 people were killed and more than 40 children were injured from landmines and other explosive ordnances since the beginning of the year. The UNMAS program manager says landmines and an exploded ordnance remain a big problem in South Sudan. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Juba resident Richard Charles was injured from an unexploded ordnance in 2014. Charles says he picked up a metal item from the ground which exploded within seconds and cut off part of his right hand.
When I was 14 years old, I got into an accident through a landmine or an exploded ordnance or a granite. I found a metallic object on the ground to play with in our area, not knowing that it was an unexploded ordnance. So when I tried to open it, then it exploded and hurt my right hand.
Richard Bolter, program manager for the United Nations Mine Action Service, is urging children not to pick up any unknown object they find on the ground because they could be explosive devices.
There have been 46 people hurt. 45 of them being children, one adult this year. Since records began, more than 5,000 people have been the innocent victims of landmines and other unexploded ordnance in this country.
Like Charles Bolter says, the vast majority of victims of landmines and unexploded ordnance in South Sudan do not know there are unexploded ordnance in their areas.
The last accident to take place in South Sudan was on the 26th of November, up in Yiro. 15 children were killed, 4 children killed, 11 injured, and 1 adult male also injured. So 16 people from a single device. So far, we've destroyed more than 1 million devices in this country.
Jurkuch Baraj, the chairperson of the South Sudan National Mine Action Authority, says much more demining work needs to be carried out in the country, especially in central Equatorial State, including the capital, which was a battlefield during the 5.5 years conflict.
There are people who are also playing with what scrap metals, those who are trading with them, they are also dangerous, those things. Because a person can be sent to collect something which is it can be dangerous to the life of that person. And simply because he's not aware of that, can go and play with it and then explode and kill a person. So even Yuba town is not safe.
Barach urges residents, especially those residing outside of Juba, to report any unknown object to the Mine Action Authority.
We still help them. Why? Because I was talking about vastness of the land and the rampant plantation of landmines in different areas altogether. There are areas that we have reached. The areas that have not yet been touched.
In 2004, the South Sudan government estimated that 404 square kilometers of the ground could be contaminated with landmines and other unexploded devices. After demining several areas, authority estimates that 19.3 square kilometers remain to be cleared. But Bolta says absence of peace in the country has slowed down the mining operation, making it difficult for the team to clear the remaining areas. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
And from Juba, we move to Ethiopia as people continue to flee the conflict in Ethiopia to desert camps in neighboring Sudan. Families tell harrowing stories of their escape and the ones they left behind. VOA's Heather Maddock reports from the border camps in Sudan.
This camp now houses many of the more than 46,000 refugees who recently fled war in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Hundreds more are arriving every day, despite border closings inside the conflict zone. Mothers here say they tried to cover their children's eyes as they fled, but some as young as 4 years old still asked, who killed these people, when they saw slaughtered bodies strewn on the streets. Families here tell a gruesomely similar story. This is Hawa Tesfe, a mother of four who recently fled Ethiopia. She says she has seen horrible things before, but never the brutality of recent weeks. The conflict began in November, and it is unknown how many people are dead, wounded, or missing, as the Ethiopian central government and local forces battle for control of the Tigray region. But there is a lot currently unknown about civilians still inside the war zone, as they are largely cut off from aid workers and journalists. Reports say a huge amount of people there are in desperate need of immediate help, and tensions on the ground are growing. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Umrakuba Camp, Sudan.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Ghana makes Africa proud again. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how many languages do you speak fluently?
I have a minimum of five languages. I speak my mother tongue, that is one. Two, I speak English, I speak Luganda, I speak Swahili, I speak Acholi.
I speak five languages, that is the Kakwa language, Lugbarati language, I speak English, and of course Kiswahili, and the Lunyoro language. Those are the main languages that I speak fluently.
There are two, English and Kinyarwanda. Because sometimes I feel like when I'm with this person, I can be able to speak with him or her fluently. And when I'm with that one, I can't be able to speak fluently.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Ghanaians have retained President Nana Akufo-Addo of the New Patriotic Party, while former President John Mahama of the National Democratic Party lost the battle for the presidency. Analysts say elections and results show mature democracy. For VOA News, Stacey Notes reports from Accra.
Supporters celebrated on the streets of Accra after poll authorities declared President Nana Akufo-Addo the winner of Monday's election. He beat his opponent, former President John Mahama, by a margin of 51 to 47%. In a post on his Facebook page, the president spoke Wednesday night after the Electoral Commission announced the results.
The Ghanaian people, through the results, have made it loud and clear that the two parties, the NPP and NDC, must work together, especially in Parliament, for the good of the country.
Final results in the parliamentary vote are yet to be announced, but it's possible that Akufo-Addo's New Patriotic Party may lose its majority. Some lawmakers who also held ministerial titles have lost their seats. Nonetheless, Mahama's National Democratic Congress Party has called the vote flawed and indicated they would appeal. While Ghanaian police say there were some violent incidents during the election that left five dead, election observers say the vote was largely free and fair. Political analysts say the mixed results show Ghana's democracy is maturing. Mame Adjua Gichi Jando is head of the University of Ghana's Political Science Department. She says there is a growing trend of split-ticket voting for the president and lawmaker from opposing parties.
The children, the electorate, are quite mature. They can see when you do work, when you work in the constituency, and you do not forget about them, they reward you.
Emmanuel Akwete is executive director of Ghana's Institute for Democratic Governance. He says the results should also prevent one party from pushing through laws with little debate.
I think with the new situation we have, they would be forced to discuss a little bit more, probably accommodate the opposition views a little bit more.
Over 13 million Ghanaians voted in the election, surprising some analysts who were expecting lower numbers due to voter apathy and the COVID-19 pandemic. Christopher Formagno is Regional Director for Central and West Africa at the Washington-based National Democratic Institute. In Ghana, to support domestic election observers, he says the turnout shows a commitment to democracy.
As long as we see this citizen engagement, it means that other tenets of Ghanaian democracy that include civil society advocacy, civil society monitoring of electoral processes, legislative oversight, that those other tenets would come out strengthened by the level of citizen engagement that we've seen.
This election was the third and presumably final time that Akufo-Addo and Mahama will face off for the presidency. Ghana's constitution allows presidents a maximum of 2 4-year terms. Mahama bested Akufo-Addo in 2012 but lost in 2016. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, will give a news conference on the eve of the Human Rights Day, December 9, speaking on her reflections on 2020 and looking ahead to 2021. She'll focus on the need to recover better and stand up for human rights. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
As the world commemorates Human Rights Day, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, warns the politicization of the coronavirus pandemic is undermining a range of human rights from economic, social, and cultural rights to civil and political rights. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva. The coronavirus has wrecked the lives and livelihoods of hundreds of millions of people. Globally, the pandemic has infected at least 68 million people and killed more than 1.5 million, according to the Johns Hopkins University. Safe and effective vaccines are on the horizon, providing hope that the pandemic soon will be consigned to the history books. But UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet says a medical vaccine will not prevent or cure the socioeconomic ravages caused by the pandemic. She says the only thing that can accomplish that is what she calls the vaccine of human rights. Its core ingredients, she says, are embedded in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, celebrated on Human Rights Day. The Declaration contains important international treaties that protect the rights of specific groups, including children, women, the disabled, and migrant workers. Unfortunately, Bachelet says, the failure of many countries to take the coronavirus seriously and to act quickly enough to prevent its spread has eroded these rights and protections.
Astoundingly, even to this day, some political leaders are still playing down its impact, disparaging the use of simple measures such as wearing masks and avoiding large gatherings. Politicizing a pandemic in this way is beyond irresponsible. It is utterly reprehensible. Scientific evidence and process have been discounted, and conspiracy theories and disinformation have been sown and allowed or encouraged to thrive.
Bachelet says these actions have damaged trust between nations and within nations. She says this has allowed discrimination, systemic racism, and marginalization of the most vulnerable people in the world to flourish.
In countries in conflict, COVID had added an additional layer to already multifaceted human rights calamities. In Yemen, a perfect storm of 5 years of conflict and violations, disease, blockades, and shortage of humanitarian funding set against an existing backdrop of poverty, poor governance, and lack of development is pushing the country remorselessly towards full-scale famine.
Bachelet says the pandemic has left the world exposed, vulnerable, and weakened. But she says governments can turn this situation around if they have the political will to put the right policies in place. Bachelet says leaders in powerful countries must recognize that global challenges can be met only through global cooperation. She notes no one is safe until everyone is safe. She says governments must put their narrow nationalistic responses aside for the good of all. The first test of this, she says, will be their willingness to ensure new COVID vaccines and tools reach everyone who needs them, poor and rich alike. COVID-19 is the disease caused by the coronavirus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And in Cameroon, hundreds of people are protesting on the Human Rights Day, December 10th, to call for an end to separatist violence and Boko Haram terrorism. The two conflicts have killed thousands of people in Cameroon, as Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of people, most of them women and children, sing at the city center in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, for peace to return to the Central African state. Mumabi Yvonne of the Cameroon Women's Peace Movement says human rights abuses are becoming unbearable, with women and children the most common victims.
A true truce should be observed, a ceasefire, and a dialogue where all stakeholders shall be invited, called those who have taken upon themselves to be kidnapping should be booked, and anybody who perpetrated desecration, be you of the military corps or of the non-state armed groups, justice served accordingly.
Yvonne said they organized the protest as part of activities marking the 2020 International Human Rights Day observed on December 10. The Cameroonian military has been fighting Boko Haram, the Nigeria-based Islamist terrorist group, since 2016. The military accuses the group of regular killings, abductions and burnings of mosques, churches, markets and schools. The fighting has displaced over 2 million and left more than 7 million in need of humanitarian aid. The United Nations reports that 3,000 people have been killed and 550,000 displaced since fighting broke out with English-speaking separatists in the French-majority country in 2016. In its 2020 report, Human Rights Watch says both armed groups and government forces have been committing widespread human rights abuses across Cameroon. The report says government forces and armed separatists have even killed, assaulted, or kidnapped people with disabilities. Both the military and separatist fighters have admitted quite often that human rights abuses, such as abductions, beheading of women and children, and killing of innocent civilians, exist. In some cases, the government has blamed the military and opened investigations. Feka Pashibel is coordinator of the organization Hope for Vulnerables and Orphans. She says rebels and the military should drop their weapons if they truly want peace to return to Cameroon. She says the fighting has deprived hundreds of thousands of children of their rights to education. Feka says dozens of children have been killed for going to school.
It's been 4 years of suffering. The killings have not brought any solution and will not bring any solution. We are tired of crying, of running away from home, of getting into sex work. We are tired of being slaves just to survive. Drop your guns, end the bloodshed.
Feka said Cameroon should organize what she called a true national dialogue with separatist leaders to stop human rights abuses. Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ontua, Cameroon's Minister of Women's Empowerment, says the government is committed to bringing peace, but that fighters should drop their weapons.
Prime Minister John Gute was in the Northwest and Southwest, and he spoke to them in a language that they all understand. So I'm begging them to listen to his cry and that they should give up violence. We have all become beggars of peace, and each of us has a role to play so that our beloved country can become a land of peace.
Cameroon held a so-called major national dialogue last year to solve the country's crisis, especially the Anglophone separatist crisis, but fighting has continued with gross human rights violations, according to the UN. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Mama Ama by Colonel Mido. We've been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Mama Ama. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mama, mama.
Parliamentary.